Coming up, game designers and playtesters wanted. Hello, hello, and welcome to the 9th episode of Board Game Times, the podcast about the people, places, and events making tabletop gaming great in Chicago. I'm your host, Clark Bender, and in a moment we'll be speaking to Maxine Eckel and her husband Randy about Protospiel Chicago, a game designer and testing event coming up in Bolingbrook in just under 2 weeks. Maxine is also a game designer along with Randy, and we'll be talking to them about their experiences creating games. Before that, though, I just want to check in with you. I hope you've all been having a great summer and have had lots of chances to play some games as well as enjoy the great outdoors. Of course, the weather here in Illinois isn't always great, but at least we've got games to play when it's too hot or too cold, right? And that's a fair amount of the time. Speaking of too cold, I just got back from a trip to Iceland, so I haven't had much chance for gaming the past couple of weeks. Actually, it wasn't that cold, although it was quite wet and windy. Even so, it's an absolutely gorgeous country, and if you ever get a chance to go there, I can't recommend it enough. Are there any board games about Iceland? There must be some, but I just haven't played any, and I can't think of any right now. If you know of any, let me know. Might be fun to play. I guess Viking games would kind of be related. Although I didn't play any games on the trip, I did manage to visit a very cool game store in Reykjavik called Nexus. They had an impressive selection of games, as well as related items like comics and figurines, etc. I was surprised to see that almost all of their inventory was in English, although maybe that's really not a surprise considering how small Iceland is. Luckily, as I understand it, most Icelanders are pretty fluent in English. They did have a small selection of games in Icelandic, though, mostly word games, so I picked up a copy of Codenames in Icelandic as a souvenir. That should make for an interesting game night sometime, and it's more likely to be played than the Icelandic Scrabble set that they had. Thanks to all of you who have been listening and providing feedback. I hope you've been enjoying the guests that I've had on the podcast so far, and please keep suggesting guests and topics for future episodes. There are a whole lot of people out there that I don't know, and I count on you listeners to keep me honest and up to date on what's going on in Chicago, so please keep those suggestions coming. But let's get to the interview now and my conversation about the upcoming Protospiel Chicago game design event coming up soon. I'm joined today by Randy and Maxine Eckel. We're having Randy and Maxine back, well, Maxine actually for the first time, to talk about the event that they are co-hosting, Protospiel Chicago. And that is definitely a big part of this episode. Great place for game designers and budding game designers to get their games tested. But first, as always, I like to get into knowing the guests and talking about some of their background. So we kind of heard about Randy's background, Maxine, on the last show and kind of how he got involved in gaming. So I wanted to get a little bit of that from you. So talk to me about where you grew up, how you came to be in Chicago, and what your gaming background was like growing up.
Well, I grew up right here in the suburbs. I was in the southwest suburbs, grew up in Oak Lawn. So I've been a Chicagoan my entire life. Growing up, there was a lot of card playing. That's what I remember, is playing a lot of cards.
That seems to be a very common answer for a lot of the people that have been on the show, actually.
Yeah, I think that was the game that I could play with my parents because, you know, all the other board games, they weren't much interested in. I remember being fascinated. I loved playing Stratego, could never find anybody to play with me. But my parents would always be up for Rummy or Crazy Eights or, you know, typical kind of card games to play with a kid.
Was there a family favorite in terms of card games?
No, what comes to mind is Rummy and then maybe, you know, graduating to Gin Rummy. Yeah.
When do you think you first got exposed to board games in your mind?
I haven't really thought about that. Probably after Randy. I mean, it was always, that's all I could think of was cards, cards, cards. And then Randy, with his interest in board games, I guess that's where I got into it a little bit more.
Okay. So where did you two meet?
Oh, we met at Motorola.
Young engineers.
Yes.
And the young engineers would all go out and, you know, play softball. And so we ended up, you know, in the same department, on the same team, that kind of stuff. Got to know each other there and went bike riding and started dating after that.
Yeah.
So how long have you guys been married?
33 years.
Yep.
Wow. Congratulations. That's an achievement. So 33 years of marriage. So when do you think you discovered the interest in gaming mutually? Was that something you kind of knew all along, or was it the sort of thing that one day you're like, oh, you play cards, I play cards?
Oh, wow.
I think we were playing cards when we were dating. Yeah, we were playing euchre or...
Oh, hell. Yeah, we'd be getting together with other friends. And
yeah, we had Monopoly night with some friends and Spaghetti night. We played games and that kind of stuff. So it was pretty early on.
And so somewhere in there, board games started to creep in through Randy, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I can't really put a finger on it.
Yeah.
Some friends of ours, they brought over Catan, which I wasn't a huge fan of that one. But I guess kind of then we were looking at other games and Randy got into Carcassonne, which in my mind, much better than Catan, and just kind of blossomed from there.
Yeah. All those gateway games, you know, Ticket to Ride and other things.
Yeah. Although, I mean, I still do prefer the lighter, more social games. You know, Randy likes the big, heavier games, and he has a hard time getting me to play the big, heavy ones. But for me, games are something that you do to socialize. So I like games that are light enough where you can have a conversation and just enjoy the game.
Conversation about something other than the game.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, some is the game. There's always that. You got your witty banter going.
Of course.
A little trash talk, but...
Well, if it's cards, you have to complain about your hand.
Yes, or, you know, it's like, whoa, you guys are in trouble.
And so Randy said that your impetus to get into designing, which is that you'd been playing cards and just got into your head to start playing around one day, and that's how Clever Playing Cards were born?
Yeah. Well, how much did you go into the dual value cards?
A little bit about the dual value deck with two... values and two suits on every card of a 52 card deck. So it's really like two suits in one. Two decks in one. So we came up with that idea in 2003.
Yeah.
And put that together. And Maxine and I played a lot of, you know, her traditional games that she liked, Rummy and Hearts and Uno, with that deck to see what worked and what didn't work. And then ended up publishing, you know, self-publishing two games based on that style of card. It was a co-design effort, and you'll see both our names on the box, and it was a great experience.
Yeah.
So at that time, did you know anybody that was doing this as well, that was doing any kind of game design, or know anybody who had done any game design?
No, absolutely not. Not a soul. I think we made all of the mistakes that you can make designing in a vacuum, you know?
Well, it was almost 20 years ago, right? So the resources. Sorry to point that out.
Thanks for that.
Yeah.
But you've been designing for two decades. You have to play up the positive part of it.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, okay.
You didn't have access to the kinds of resources that designers have today, even budding designers, right? I mean, they can go to YouTube or online or any number of places for inspiration. So, I mean, I think it's amazing that you guys really did that and self-published.
Right, yeah. But then we did realize that we kind of needed more play testing. You know, we self-published way too quickly. At that point, I think I was doing a little surfing and found Protospiel Milwaukee. And it was fortuitous. I must have been doing this in March because it was just like April. They were holding the event. And it's like, well, what do you think? I'd kind of like to go and check it out. And we did. And that was incredible. It was just eye-opening. You know, all these people there willing to help you and play your game and give you all sorts of great advice and not just on your game, but self-publishing or finding a publisher, or it's a wealth of information at Protospiel.
So did you bring Clever Playing Cards there to that first Protospiel and actually get to test, or were you a little too shy and you were just kind of observing, or?
Actually, what we took there was Stripes.
Right. So this was after the dual value cards, you know, Think Ahead and High and Low Poker. Maxine had started working on one of her own games, Stripes, and took that to Protospiel Milwaukee and just had a fantastic experience with that.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect lead in, because I wanted to ask about Stripes, which is Maxine's design that's being published by Breaking Games.
Only available online. If you go to the Breaking Games website, it's there.
Yep, they took it to Gen Con. So there's a nice little banner at Gen Con at the Breaking Games.
What was that like? That must have been pretty exciting.
It's cool to see it out there. It's very, very cool.
Yeah.
Was this virtual Gen Con? Or was this at an actual?
Oh, no, no, no. Stripes has been out for a couple of years.
Okay, so yeah, this is at the last physical Gen Con.
2019.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So were you demoing there and repping the game? And
no, I wasn't demoing. They had other people, you know, who regularly worked the booth to demonstrate all their games. So we were just able to enjoy the convention and take my picture with this. This is cool.
That's really exciting. So talk about how that game sprung out of the playing cards work you had done before.
So I had taken our games, Think Ahead and High and Low Poker, to Chi-Tag, which is hosted by Mary Cousin in November. That's another huge convention. I mean, if you want to get published, you can go there and meet all sorts of industry insiders and make some great contacts there. And that's what I did, that, you know, we had self-published these games and we still were kind of oblivious.
Trying to figure out what do we do now?
You know, it's like, how do you get it into stores? And and when I was there, people were like, well, are you looking for a distributor? Are you looking for a publisher? And I'm like, yes, please. I got a lot of good information there. And there was one offhand comment made to me about, well, these cards look too much like cards. You need something totally different. You need something that doesn't look like a card. Cards that don't look like cards. And I'm like, okay. So
what does that mean?
Took that home and thought about that for a while and kind of came up with Stripes. And I can distinctly remember being at, was it Bobber's, that restaurant?
Yep.
And Randy and I, you know, I'm kind of explaining to him what I was thinking and we're drawing on napkins and doing all sorts of just hashing it out.
Prototyping. You were prototyping.
Yeah, we were prototyping. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. And how you were saying that there's a lot more tools available now. I mean, our original prototypes for Stripes, that was... Yeah, I was making spreadsheets and, you know, just like coloring in a cell with the different colors. And then you print it out, you know, big enough, like card size. And it's like, there you go.
Yeah. Excel is the first prototype for Stripes.
Yeah.
Do you remember when that inspiration came to you? Because it is kind of a jump, right? You're going from like sort of a traditional playing card with faces and numbers to a more abstract color pattern based card.
No, I think it was there. We were just having a hamburger at Bobber's and we were talking about what doesn't look like a card. And
no numbers, no suits, but like you said, just stripes and not colors. And
I remember drawing lines, you know, some were straight across, some would like crisscross or so. Yeah, it just kind of evolved from there.
Yeah.
So how long did you prototype playtest before you took it to potential publishers?
Oh, well, let's see. So we took Stripes to Protospiel Milwaukee. So that was in 2015. And then, went back to Chi-Tag that same year.
In November.
So from April to November. And then Sherry did sign the game, but I kept bringing it back. That was the great thing with working with Breaking Games is they keep the designer involved in the whole process. So, you know, I thought I got a game signed. This is cool. It's done. But they're like, no, you know, we need to refine this a little bit. We're going to play test a little more. And I'm like, okay, cool. But I just had the best experience working with Sherry and Peter Vaughn and staying involved with Protospiel. Because, you know, I would talk to Peter. He was on the West Coast, or I guess still is. And we would talk about different rule changes or, you know, whatever modifications we wanted to make to the game. And then I would take it to our playtest groups or, you know, the next Protospiel, and he would test it out there. And then we would talk again and make more changes. And it was just the best. I was taking it to Protospiel for a couple of years. Yeah. Before Breaking Games was like, yep, this is finally done. Yeah, I can't thank the people at Protospiel enough for how many times they played Stripes. It's great. They're the best.
Did the game have some pretty significant alterations from those first designs, or was it really more of a streamlining, do you think, over those years? I mean, it's all changes, but I'm just curious, can you point to big changes that you had to make?
You know what? I don't think they were huge. We changed the number of stripes that were on a card from 5 to 6. Mm-hmm. And we might have played around with that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then there was, do we have a wild stripe, or do we, have blanks on it? So, I mean, that's a little bit of tweaking. I think the maybe the biggest was I initially had where we're dealing out cards that have all the different actions on them. And what that ended up being was that we got rid of the whole deck of cards. There is just like 7 different actions. And depending on the number of players, you'll use a different subset of those actions. And then they are on tiles face up in the middle of the table. And you take turns going around using an action and turning it face down. And then when the round's over, you advance first player token and do it all again. But I think that was the biggest change, mm-hmm. was going from a full deck where that's where your actions were, just having a few on the table in the middle.
Yeah, I that's exactly how I remember it. It was tweaks and just continuing to make a good game better and better until they thought it was good enough to go to market.
Well, I think that's really interesting to hear, right? Because, I mean, I've toyed with designs in my head, but I've never really gotten so far as to put anything down on paper yet. But for people who are more budding designers and are going through those process, I think it's really interesting to hear. Obviously, there can be all sorts of major changes you make in a game in development, but to hear how that honing process literally, like, changes might be very small for a couple of years, but there are all these incremental steps to just really honing that game to make it sing in the way you want to sing, right?
Yeah. And Maxine talked about taking the stripes to Protoshville, Milwaukee, and Protoshville, Madison, and Protoshville, Chicago. And we went to 6 or 7 Protoshvilles.
And Indy and Michigan.
And Minneapolis. And, there's 7 or 8 of them that we went to one year.
Yeah, we did go to Minneapolis, too. And that's nuts, because that's in January.
But taking it to all these places, the great thing is you get input from so many people. And some people like it the way it is. And some people say, you need to do this and this and this, and this is broken. And as the designer, right, it's great that Maxine got all this input and then decides, what's the vision of my game, right? What do I want to accept? Yeah. What do I want to change? Mm-hmm. What do I think is the target market for my game is casual gamers. And the suggestion this guy over here had was to make it a very heavy game. So no, I don't want to do that. That doesn't fit my vision. Right. But it's great to get input from so many diverse sources, playtesters and store owners and manufacturers and press and everybody, industry experts and just everyone. So it really helped shape the game.
Did you ever try and estimate how many hands of your game you played?
Oh, gosh, no.
Safe to say hundreds, it sounds like.
Probably.
At least, least.
Was there ever a point where you felt like you were ready to start taking it to publishers? Were you always taking it to publishers all along? Or was there a sort of a point where it's like, I personally don't feel like it's ready yet. I want to keep testing. And then you got to a point where you're like, no, now it's ready.
As I said, it was pretty quickly taking it to that first Protospiel in April to then pitching it in November. But on the other hand, it's a light card game. There are other games that, I've developed, and I don't know that I would pitch it in, 6-7 months.
Sure.
I think it was easy enough that I was like, this could be pretty good. There's something here.
You know a hit when you play.
Yeah.
Right.
Your gut was just said, this is ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the early feedback was very positive as well. Those first 6 months, people aren't saying this is broken or this is a disaster or what a horrible game or any of that. They were like, wow, this is different. This is fun. This is a card game that's not like a card game.
So now that you say that, I do remember that first Protospiel, it kind of had table presence. I mean, it's not as polished as it is now, but people would stop by the table and they're looking at these cards that have just all these different colors on them. And they're like, oh, what's that? I want to play that. So mm-hmm. It did get a lot of attention, which really kind of encouraged me.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation because I think it's a game that I haven't played, but just having looked at information about it and seeing some of the photos of it, I could see how it could have that table presence where you'd be walking by a game and it has a very different look. It has a very unique look. It's very colorful. the lines going across between the cards. If you don't know the game, you can sort of assume all sorts of interesting things. So it makes you want to find out about it, right?
Right.
Because you're kind of like,
right.
What is going on? Is this are they graphing something? Is that a timeline, right? It's like, what's happening there? So I think that's really, I think you're right.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting piece. And so I just want to talk about one last section because you've sort of intimated it. So the game gets signed. Mm-hmm. And as you said, you're fortunate enough that breaking games keeps you pretty involved in the process. Again, for people who might be imagining what that process is like for themselves, who maybe think like, oh, once you're signed, you're done, right? Boom. But so you talked about how, oh, no, then there's their rounds of typing. And can you talk a little bit about that process? And I know the graphic design process of that can often be dramatic departure from what a person may have done before then. So can you talk a little bit about that process for you?
So, well, once Peter and I had done all of our testing and they say, okay, this was good to go. Then Wes, I'm sorry, Wes, I can't think of your last name. He was doing all of the graphic design and I am not artistic at all. And he took over and it was just beautiful. It was very important to make it colorblind friendly. So all of the different colors have a different pattern or texture to them. And when he showed me, you know, what was there, it's like, this is beautiful. I've got no complaints about this at all.
Even the box design, right? Yeah, Maxine had a very two-dimensional, you know, looking cards and box.
Oh, yeah.
And Wes came along and made it look like ribbons and 3D and those kind of things.
Right.
They kept her very involved with, oh, what's the tagline and what's the ages and, you know, the duration.
Yeah.
And, you know, she provided input and feedback on all of those things.
Yeah, that was something that surprised me was that I pretty much wrote the rules. I mean, I thought that they would have like a professional rule writer. I don't know. But so, they took my rules and Wes spruced it up graphics wise. But that was
they certainly proofread them and
absolutely tweaked
them as needed, but there is minimal amount because like Maxine said, it was, the gameplay is fairly straightforward. It's a light game, so it's pretty easy to be thorough in the rules. It was just making them consistent and making the rule book look good. Rule book, right? Four pages.
But I do remember because they came back and they were asking me for, could I come up with examples?
Yeah.
So I remember we were in Pittsburgh and I was like, oh, okay, I got to pull out my cards and I'm trying to make an example for the rules. And, I'm sending them pictures and then, of course, they make them pretty. It was nice just being involved all the way through.
It was a great experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like a fantastic experience for a first time published, not self-published game.
Right.
You know, it's fantastic. And so how's the game been doing since it's been out there?
It does well. I don't get the exact numbers all the time, but, it's still selling.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wish it would make that jump to stores. It might do well in stores.
It does seem like a good candidate for like a Target, Walmart.
Yeah, but there's such fierce competition for shelf space.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'd put it in the category like you brought up before about an Uno or something like that. It's an evergreen type game. It doesn't have this big heavy theme. It's an abstract thing.
Yeah, there's nothing about it that would ever get dated. So that's
exactly
right.
You know,
right.
And the price point, right? Oh, this is a great game for, a Christmas present or a birthday present or something.
Sure.
And kids 8 and up can play it. So it's
I really recommend to listeners to check it out. You go to the Breaking Game site and look up Stripes, Maxine Ekel, EKL. Really visually striking and just a great example of this kind of lighter, family-friendly game. I mean, it's just a really beautiful package. So I really recommend to people to check it out, buy it, play the game, do all those things, right? But even just to look at it as an example of, what a game can look like, a fairly straightforward, simple game and just making it visually pleasing. So you should be very happy with the way it came out because I think it's really lovely.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that game comes out, and I want to shift gears now into Protospiel, and you're getting involved with Protospiel Chicago. So you're co-hosting Protospiel Chicago, but how did that come to be? You had been exposed to Protospiel, obviously, in your own design efforts. Take me from there.
I think it was 2015. We went to the first Protospiel in Milwaukee, and we just had a great time. And I don't remember what other Protospiels we might have attended that year. The following year, when we went to Milwaukee again, as we're driving home, I remember having a conversation. It's like, why is there not one in Chicago? I couldn't understand it because we have so many game designers here in Chicago. And I asked Randy, I'm like, well, what if we host one? I don't know that he was fully on board initially, but we got there. And the thing is, it was made so easy by a couple of things. One is Tabletop Events, which is a software package that, you know, it's like all you do is go on there and you fill in some information, design your page a little bit, and it will take care of your badge sales. So you don't have to create your own website and do the whole, was it like a cash register
thing? E-commerce thing, right? Yeah. It had all of that. It would even manage events if you had separate events, which Protospiels don't, but, you know, it could handle a Gen Con.
This tool just made it so easy. The other really big thing was just trying to find a venue and be willing to take a little bit of a loss if, you know, we couldn't sell enough badges to pay for the venue. Fortunately, you know, we've broken even every year since. So
yeah, like you said, the Chicago gaming community, it's big, right? There's a lot of gamers, there's a lot of designers, there's a lot of people that are interested in playtesting new designs or unique designs that come out and want to see something. So, you know, like Maxine said, the first year we got 80 or 100 people registered, and it's gone up ever since. We sold out in 2019, is the last Protospiel we had, because we didn't have one last year. The biggest hurdle was getting the venue.
A lot of people traveled to Milwaukee. That's also kind of why I chose September. I think we were even considering October. You know, we wanted to be far enough time-wise, you know, chronologically as well as geographically from Milwaukee, that, you know, we didn't want to cannibalize their event. I think it's worked out very well.
Yeah, their attendance has stayed up.
Yeah, they have good attendance. And, you know, since we've started Chicago, then Indy has started another one. It's great. It's just kind of blossoming.
Indianapolis one, you know, they announced their dates for early 2022, and they've gotten a bigger venue. So they anticipate growth as well, right? Mm-hmm. They're in their third year, maybe.
Maybe four.
Kind of developing a nice circuit in the Midwest, which is great.
Yeah.
For people who may not be familiar with Protospiel, talk about the event. What is it? How long does it last? What happens there?
So Protospiels are a weekend event, Friday to Sunday, usually held at a hotel. You get a banquet room there, and it's mostly game designers that just come with their prototypes and you play each other's games and give feedback. The general rule is you should play other people's games for as much is the same amount of time as they have given you. So like if three people play your game for an hour, you should go play other people's games for 3 hours. You know, you got 3 hours worth of feedback, so you should go give 3 hours.
We also like to have a number of people that are just playtesters. There are people that promote themselves as professional playtesters, and they've developed their persona to here's how they give feedback and here's what they look for in a game. And then we also have, you know, some industry experts, you know, from Board Game Geek or from a game store or other places. Again, they're not bringing designs. They're just coming to provide feedback. So the one-to-one ratio is fudged a little bit in the favor of the designer, which is great, right? That's what the designer wants. That's what the playtesters want. So it works out for everybody.
Sure.
Yeah. And sometimes publishers show up. I mean, there have been some games signed at a Protospiel, but that's not the focus. And if a publisher plays your game, that's just another viewpoint, another perspective that you're getting feedback from. And that's just great. I think we have about 2/3 designers to 1/3 playtesters. Other Protospiels, I think, kind of like it to be more designer heavy. Others are, you know, just as happy with a 50-50 mix.
Right.
I kind of like where it's a little bit more designers to play testers. Yeah. So yeah, the 2/3, 1/3. I think that's about what you get in Chicago.
Is Chicago fairly wide-ranging in terms of the weights? Even mix, or does it tend to be lighter family-oriented? I'm just curious.
I think it's all over the place.
Yeah.
Somebody brought an RPG before, you know, the collectible card games, lots of board games, lots of card games, deck builders, worker placements.
Dexterity
games, yeah, all kinds of things. Some people bring the three-hour games. And then again, at a Protospiel, most designers are looking to identify, you know, what's the problems with the game or help me fix this game or whatever. So if someone brings a 3 or 4 hour game, you typically don't sit and play the entire game. They'll focus you in on, let's play the first 45 minutes of this game because I want to make sure it starts up and it's interesting and it's balanced after the first hour. Or they'll set it up, let's play the ending of the 4 hour game, right? Well, how's the closing? Is it abrupt? Is there a kingmaker? Those kind of things. So it's not just this kind of game or that kind of game.
So what are Randy and Maxine's do's and don'ts as frequent attendees and now organizers of a Protospiel? What's your advice for people who are coming in terms of things to do, things not to do?
Oh, I know one of Randy's, you got to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's that, Maxine?
If you're a designer, take notes. Because a lot of designers will just sit there and they'll nod and, oh, I'll remember. No, you won't. Write it down.
You're going to get feedback from lots of different people, right?
Yeah.
Write it down.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's respectful of their time too, that you're taking the time to write down so you will remember their comments. You may not implement them, you know, like we said earlier, it might not be right for your game. It's not part of your vision, but you never know. You might come back to it later and mm-hmm. say, you know, they might have had something there. It's this whole be respectful of other people's time and respect their opinion. You know, if you don't agree with it, that's fine. But
keep an open mind. If yeah. you hear that same opinion you don't agree with from 15 different people, well, they're onto something,
yeah.
right? Be open to hearing that feedback and making the decision. Is this something I want to do or isn't this something I want to do? You know, like Maxine talked about before, reciprocate. People are spending their time with you, being honest with you because they want to help you improve your game. Go play their game, be respectful, and give them honest feedback, even if it's, you know, harsh. That's okay. Constructive, right? It's some people go in and their goal is to break your game, right? And that's okay because you want to know if your game is broken.
Yeah.
Then you can fix it. If you don't know your game's broken and you know it moves on, it might be harder to come back and fix it later on.
There's something else that I do. I didn't do it the first couple of Protospiels, but I've learned. And that is, I used to just play test anybody's game. But now I think my time is better spent. I kind of ask, it's like, you know what? I like the lighter games. Is this like a real heavy game? Because I don't think I would be good at giving them feedback. You know, they probably would be better served by another play tester. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid to, you know, take a pass on somebody's game if it's not something you're going to enjoy or, you know, be able to help them with.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like if you wouldn't pick it off of the shelf or even think about buying it, right? Why play test it?
I do play more things than I normally would, but if it's kind of over my head, it's not this genre I know. And just don't be afraid to pick and choose a little bit on what you're going to help play test. Mm-hmm.
It is a great place to get exposed to a lot of different kind of games.
Yeah.
Right. Even if you don't sit down and play them,
right.
you can come by, listen to the rules explanation.
Absolutely.
Look over somebody's shoulder.
Yep. And I've learned a lot
about a lot
of different genres.
Well, and I assume it must be fascinating to be exposed to other designers' design style as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, mm-hmm. Some designers are very much mechanics first, right? Oh, I want a card game and I want it to be a deck builder and blah, blah, blah. And it's going to work like this. Oh, now I need a theme. Other designers are theme first, right? Mm-hmm. Or other designers are, you know, oh, I'm looking for a good experience through the entire game, right? Some designers are looking for that aha moment, right? That wow moment that I'm going to remember next time. Yeah. So yeah, the designers have all kind of different approaches. Some designers we know are just fantastic artists.
Oh my gosh.
They have the table presence and you're just awed by the cards and the board and all the components and everything. And that entices you. Then they marry up the design with their art. Lots of different approaches, lots of different personalities. And it's just so fascinating.
And there aren't breakout sessions at a Protospiel or anything like that, right? There's no presentations, really. It is just, it's a room and tables and people testing games.
That's it. You just mingle and go from table to table. Or, you know, sometimes you start out with a group of people and, you know, you play my game and then it's like, okay, well, what do you have? I'm done, you know, and you just kind of go around the table or you excuse yourself and go play a different game.
Yeah. Speaking of mingling, Maxine had a great idea a couple of years ago.
Shabingo.
Shabingo. Okay. I'm intrigued.
Chicago Bingo. So we came up with this in Milwaukee at breakfast with a couple of other
Milwaukee designers.
Yeah. So it was Andrew Hansen and Peter Dast. We came up with Shabingo. So it's our metagame. What we were trying to do is get people to mix. There's such a community with Protospiel and it's like a reunion every time. It's like, oh, hey, how you doing? But you also want to, there's new people coming in all the time and you want to make them feel welcome. So we have this bingo card and there's different
attributes, characteristics.
Yeah. So it's like play a game that has dice in it. And the other one is play a game with a zombie theme. People just loved it. It was a lot of fun.
Once you play, you know, enough games to check off five boxes in a row, bring
Shabingo.
Shabingo.
So will we hear people throughout the day shouting Shabingo at various times?
Absolutely.
Yep. Absolutely. Bring your sheet up to the registration table and pick a prize. And there's a drawing at the end.
And, and we even have the ribbons that go on your badge that says Shabingo.
If Shabingo you get a Shabingo, winner.
So people know if you got a Shabingo.
Reason to attend right there.
Right.
Yeah. We're fortunate that we have some great sponsors that are providing prizes. That, you know, the list is on the protospielchicago.org website. Each of them is providing, you know, three or four games or gaming equipment like card cases and those kind of things. Of course, the Game Crafter is providing multiple tables worth of components, you know, blank card prototyping pieces. There's some other board game companies that are providing game design tools, swag that everybody gets.
Got to have your swag.
I'll say it's worth the price of admission right there.
Sounds fantastic. So let's just talk about the specifics, the where's, the when's, how to register. And I know you also have a vaccination requirement that we should probably just mention.
Well, let's see. The where is in Bolingbrook. The Holiday Inn and Suites in Bolingbrook.
Right off of I-55, so very easy to get to.
Southwest Chicago, for those of you who aren't familiar with Bolingbrook.
September 10th to the 12th. It starts at 9 a.m., goes till midnight, except on Sunday, I think we cut it off at 4. There's a restaurant in the hotel, so they don't allow you to bring in your own food, but there's a lot of restaurants around. Mm-hmm. We do have the restaurant cater a few snacks and beverages.
The who is board game designers, budding board game designers, play testers, people interested in shaping the next board games that are coming to market, board game retailers, game companies, you name it. If you have an interest in board games, come check it out.
How would somebody go about registering? Do you have a capped number for how many people can register?
We haven't hit that cap yet, but it's protospiel-chicago.org. It'll explain all about Protospiel, how to buy badges. You can register, you know, list your prototype so people can kind of, you know, look ahead and say, oh, that one sounds interesting. I want to play that one. So you can like kind of vote and show your interest.
There's already a dozen prototypes listed up there. Registration for designers is $50 for the entire weekend. So you get the playtest game for 15 hours on Friday and 15 hours on Saturday and, well, 10 hours on Sunday.
Practically just a buck an hour. That's nothing.
That's right.
And you can playtest your games and you can playtest other games and you can talk to designers.
And we should mention vaccinations are going to be required. Yes?
Yes. Yes. We decided back in March or April. I just couldn't live with myself if, you know, we became a super spreader event, you know.
Yes. Yes.
I don't want anybody getting sick because of Protospiel. And people have been very supportive of that. Hopefully next year will be a whole new ball game and we don't even have to think about it. But now I'm kind of glad that we made this decision with the Delta variant.
Better safe than sorry, right?
Yes, absolutely.
One of the giveaways we have for every attendee is a bottle of hand sanitizer.
That's great. Well, it is board gaming. You're going to be touching a lot of stuff.
Yeah. That's right.
It's kind of unavoidable. So let's subject Maxine to the mini game. Actually, it's just a fancy name for a questionnaire. So there's no game. There's no scoring, as far as you know.
Okay.
First question, Maxine. What is your gaming beverage of choice?
Red wine.
Wow, that was easy. She went right to that. No hesitation. Easy. Red wine. All right. Next question then. What is your preferred number of players at the gaming table?
I kind of like six because that means our whole family is together.
Nice. That's good. That's sizable. Most people go three or four. So I like that you're standing up for the bigger gaming groups. Next question. What do you think is your most admirable gaming trait or behavior?
I pay attention to the game, so I know when it's my turn.
There you go.
I don't like stop and tell stories for 15 minutes and everybody's waiting to play the game.
You don't hold the game hostage.
I do not hold the game hostage.
That's a good trait. That's a very good trait. Okay, then next question, the flip side. What do you think is your least admirable gaming trait or behavior?
Well, I hate to say it, but I cannot hide my frustration. If somebody like takes my move that I was going to do, it's like, gosh, darn it.
That's one of those great gaming experiences that everybody else enjoys.
Yeah, they all enjoy it, but I'm just so frustrated.
How can we get Maxine to lose her cool?
Yeah.
That's their own little mini game, I guess. All right, so next question. What is a type or genre of game that you just love to play?
Oh, I love trick-taking card games. That's me. I keep trying to design one and I can't come up with a you know, really, truly unique, good one. Although we're co-designing one. So come to Protospiel and you can try it.
Okay. So you'll be testing it there?
Yep.
All right. There you go. Reason number whatever to go to Protospiel. Consider yourselves teased.
Yes.
Next question then. What is a type or genre of game that you do not enjoy?
Like the big, big, heavy Euro kind of games.
Just not your cup of tea.
Yeah. If it goes an hour, that's good. Hour and a half, I could tolerate. After that, nah.
All right, then. Next question. What is a physical game component that you love?
Oh, I love when there's a lot of dice. I don't know. I like dice. I know a lot of people don't like dice because it's just too random, but some games you just have like this big whole bunch of dice and they could take some of the randomness out of it, you know, if you've got a lot of dice to work with, but I like dice.
Okay. You know, in my head, I thought, oh, she's surely going to say cards, but I like them.
Oh, well.
I like the contrarian response. You might be making the cards jealous, but we won't tell them.
Okay.
Next question. What is a game that you own but haven't played?
Can't think of one of those. That's kind of Randy's wheelhouse.
I buy too many games and don't get them to the table.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's the one that's always looking at the new games that are coming out and researching. And it's like, oh, that one looks good. And I'm kind of happy playing what we have. And I mean, I like playing games, but you know, it's like, I don't want to have to learn a new game every time we sit down to play a game. So.
Okay. So Randy's your concierge in that particular regard.
Is. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, similar question, but what is a game you really want to play, but just never have?
Can you think of an answer for me? Well, actually, I'm intrigued by what's the one Forbidden Games is coming out with? The
Dungeon Party. Yes, Forbidden Games is, I don't know if they've kickstarted it already. It's called Dungeon Party. So it's a D&D at the bar kind of game. So you have multiple coasters for your drinks, but then you're bouncing a coin or something off of.
So, yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily, you know, like my usual type of game, but I'm intrigued. Again, it scratches that social aspect itch that I have for playing games and getting together with people.
So Dungeon Party. Yep.
Yeah.
That's great. That's a good answer. So finally then, what's a game you currently want to recommend and why?
I will say our family's go-to card game is Five Crowns. And we're probably on like our fourth or fifth deck because we wear it out so much. But a board game, I do like Kingdom Builder. It's the simplicity of it. You know, I think it's just a very elegant mechanic.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Game recommendation. Five Crowns, Kingdom Builder. Fantastic. Well, you've completed the mini game. Painless, right?
Phew. All right, good.
I can just see the sweat flopping off of Maxine's brow. Congratulations. Let's remind people about the key points of Protospiel Chicago. And if you want to pitch for where people can see Stripes as well or clever playing cards, take it away.
All right. Protospiel Chicago is September 10th to the 12th this year, 2021. You can go to protospiel-chicago.org. I wonder if I should spell that. protospiel-chicago.org. And then our company, Clever Playing Cards. We have a website, cleverplayingcards.com. We have Facebook, which is Clever Playing Cards, and Twitter, CPC Games. We are notoriously horrible at social media, but hey, follow us if you want.
If you want to get a hold of either of us directly, it's Maxine at cleverplayingcards.com or Randy at cleverplayingcards.com.
And Stripes, you can go online to breakinggames.com. Just search on Stripes.
So there you go. So you've got some great recommendations there. Make sure you check out Protospiel Chicago, whether you just want to play games or if you've got a game that you'd like some people to start helping you test out. Check out Stripes. Check out Clever Playing Cards. A lot of opportunities to play some fun new games there. Maxine, Randy, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. Randy, thank you for your return appearance. And Maxine, for letting me ask you all the pointed questions for the day. Good luck with the games, both released and in testing, and good luck with Protospiel Chicago, and hope you have great attendance.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Clark.
And that's this episode's interview. I hope you found it as interesting as I did, so make sure to check out Protospiel Chicago, whether you're a game designer or a player. Sounds like a really interesting time, and maybe I'll see you there. Thanks again, of course, to Maxine and Randy Eckel for being on the podcast. And thanks, as always, to listeners like you. If you're enjoying the show, please rate and review it on whatever podcast platform you found it on. And share your feedback with me at clark@boardgametimes.com. That's Times with an S. Or on the Board Game Times page on Facebook. Let me know what you think of the show. Suggest guests. Suggest games. Tell me what you're playing. Honestly, just tell me whatever's on your mind. But until next time, thanks for listening, and may all your board game times be the best of times. Take care.